podcast is Point of Discovery. Today I've got a special treat. I'm handing over the reins of the podcast to our science writing intern, Kaysen Hunwick. He explores what artificial intelligence might teach us about how hyenas in Africa evolved a surprising hunting tactic. Along the way, you'll learn about an area of computer science called computational evolution, where machines evolve solutions in response to complex problems, and a lot more quickly than we living things can do. Kaysen spoke with computer scientists Padmini Rajagopalan and Risto Mikkelainen from the University of Texas at Austin.
Imagine you're in a grassy African savanna. Just picture it. The sun is hanging low. It's just about to set. But then you hear a lion. You look over and you see the lion standing over a zebra carcass. There's blood and torn, striped flesh in its mouth. It's clear that the hunt is over and this is dinner. But wait. A spotted hyena has just approached the lion, hoping to do what you just thought was impossible and steal some of the lion's fresh kill. It lunges for the zebra carcass, but the lion makes a precise, powerful strike and sends the hyena screeching and running. Of course, for a solo hyena to try this is pretty foolhardy, and in attempting to steal the prey from the lion, it could just as easily have become it. But in groups, spotted hyenas have found a way to steal the kill and walk away without a scratch. Scot-free, full stomachs. They group up and execute a coordinated attack on the lions in a cooperative behavior known as mobbing. Back on the savanna, let's listen in as a collaborator of two UT computer scientists, Michigan State University Professor of Integrated Biology, Kay Holkamp, looks on at the behavior. She's joined by a member of her lab, Aaron, who provides the play-by-play as they watch a successful mobbing event in Kenya play out. Aaron starts by counting the approaching hyenas.
14 hyenas are here.
Two more join, and it becomes a frenzy.
The mob kind of circled the lions. They've all clustered up over there.
And finally, they all rush together.
All right, they've driven off two of the lions. Oh, they got the carcass. Nice, guys.
Mobbing has been the subject of study for decades because it's something of a mystery. Hyenas behave instinctually, and yet they find strength in numbers. They get enough hyenas together to overpower predators far stronger than them. So how exactly did this behavior evolve? University of Texas at Austin computer science researchers Padmini Rajagopalan and Risto Mikkelainen studied this question.
We can't study evolution in action in the real world. The only way we can actually do it is in simulation.
That's Rajagopalan, and she says that evolution is just too slow to observe. Plus, it's not like you can look back in time. Instead, you have to simulate how hyenas' behaviors may have developed over the generations. To accomplish this task, Rajagopalan started out with 100 randomly generated learning algorithms. They're sort of like stand-ins for hyenas' brains. And out of this first generation of 100 blank slate artificial hyenas, Rajagopalan randomly selects 10 of them and assigns this team the task to mob the lion. Now, at least four of them need to rush the lion simultaneously, but if they rush in too early, they might die, and if they come in after the lion has mobbed, they get less of a reward.
This way, I test many different teams of 10 hyenas. Once I've done that, I look at the population of hyenas and see which were closest to what I wanted them to do.
Many other teams of 10 computerized hyenas from each generation are then tested and run through these trials. The hyenas that survive get to reproduce and create the next generation.
So what I mean by that is I mix up their little codes and get new hyenas that hopefully have some of the best characteristics.
The ones with higher fitness levels have more offspring. This mimics how the behavior evolved in real life. Hyenas that behave in ways that are beneficial then survive to mate and pass on their traits, while those that behave in ways that hurt their chances of survival are less likely to pass on their traits. R- repeating this selection, testing, and reproduction for 1,000 generations happens a lot faster on a computer than in real hyena lifetimes.
In the initial generations, we saw other behaviors emerging. There was this risk-taking behavior where the hyena just went straight to the lion, attacked it all by itself, and died. And there were these risk-averse hyenas which stayed far away from the lion, waiting for it to be driven away. So they avoided death, but they also didn't get much reward. Slowly, over the next few generations, we saw that mobbing emerged as a kind of combination of these behaviors, both the risk-averse and the risk-taking.
So in other words, mobbing arose out of two kinds of impulses the hyenas developed. I don't want to die, and I want the reward. But then Rajagopalan saw something unexpected. Those two extreme behaviors on each end of the spectrum, rushing in and dying or waiting around the periphery, those did not go away.
The behaviors I mentioned that emerged early, like the simple behaviors of attacking the lion by themselves or waiting around far away and never really participating in the mobbing event, these behaviors still tended to stick around, even though I evolved the hyenas for a very prolonged period. So the mobbing behavior itself did emerge within the first 10 generations, but I kept the evolution going for 1,000 generations, and still these other behaviors did not go away.
Why did they stick around? Computer scientist Risto Mikkelainen, who was Rajagopalan's advisor for the work, he asked the same question and he offered an explanation.
Well, why would they stay around? You would think that, hey, now they have a successful mobbing that just takes over the whole population. Everybody does the same thing. But you don't see that in biology. I mean, you do see in all kinds of societies, you see a persistent minority. And we saw it here as well. And that was a surprise, but after the fact, we can explain it. Let's say that now there's a new species or new group of lions that are much, much stronger for some reason. So now it's really good to have hyenas that are less bold. The species survives and they develop a better strategy.
And similarly, if the lions become weaker, being that fearless, courageous, go-it-alone hyena might actually start to pay off with big rewards. Now, Mikkelainen explains that while these simulations are useful, they will not entirely replace fieldwork in the real world.
Computation and simulations can always give you suggestions or insights or proposals on what to look at. But the actual verification still has to be done in the discipline itself.
So thankfully, biologists and computational scientists are not in opposition. Scientists can use the technology in some constructive back and forth. Biologists find something interesting in the field, maybe in cells or in primate behavior, and then the computer scientists study it in theoretical space, returning to the biologists a suggestion for what to look for in the field, in real life. For example, in mobbing, the UT computer scientists may ask field researchers if they observe those two hyena behaviors that stuck around in the simulations. Maybe if they see a hyena lurking far away and joining only after the mobbing has ended, or if they see that brave hyena rushing in alone and risking its life. In this way, both groups need each other. And there are plenty of fields this new kind of artificial intelligence, computational evolution, it's called, could help. Any field that involves complex problem solving can benefit from systems that evolve solutions to problems. But Mikkelainen again makes it clear that the technology is not here to replace humans.
We are talking about machine creativity and machines coming up with surprises and solutions that humans won't think about. But it's still a tool for humans. It's an extension of their way of thinking.
This has been Kaysen Hunrick reporting for Point of Discovery.
Thank you, Kaysen. Point of Discovery is a production of the University of Texas at Austin's College of Natural Sciences. Music for today's show is by Pogmothowin, a.k.a. Tom Griffin, and by Poddington Bear. To read a transcript of this show and see a video of real-life hyenas mobbing a lion, visit us on our website at pointofdiscovery.org. If you like what you heard, be sure and tell your friends. We're available wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Our senior producer is Christine Sinatra. I'm your host and producer, Mark Earhart. Thanks for listening.